Welcome to the MIR podcast. I'm Kathy Posey, a director at MIR.
And I'm Ariana Yupi, senior project officer at MIR. Our mission is simple: open public climate education.
Each episode, we bring on researchers, practitioners, and communicators to unpack the current climate situation across science, impacts, solutions, and policy.
We connect the dots from physics and tipping points to community innovation, youth leadership, and practical cooling approaches, including MIR's ground-based democratic installations.
Expect clarity over hype, evidence over buzzwords, and practical takeaways you can use.
Guest ideas or topics? Find us on social media or via MIR.org.
All right, let's dive in. Today, we are joined by Martin Palmer, author of The Nemesis of Planet A, Is the Human Race Sleepwalking Toward Its Own Extinction? And founder of the Rotaract Net Zero Initiative within Rotary International.
Martin has worked for decades in the UK Royal Air Force and gained experience in the Ministry of Defence, where he was engaged with the most senior figures. He engaged with a wide range of high-level politicians, military personnel, scientists, and senior industrialists across the 16 nations that were members of NATO. Martin chaired two different NATO committees and therefore has an understanding of the challenges in managing complex entities such as the IPCC. He is so concerned over the climate crisis, he has been moved to write a book about it.
Martin is a member of Rotary International and is helping launch a new wave of Rotaract Net Zero clubs, which place climate action at their core. Rotaract is a club format suited to young adults ages 18 to around 30. Martin has partnered with MIR to help make this vision real. Martin, welcome. We are delighted to have you with us.
Well, first of all, Kathy, thank you both very much for the privilege of being able to appear with you on the MIR podcast. I am not a climate scientist, but I became so concerned over climate change that I thought about writing a book on the subject. And that was as long ago as 2015, during the lead up to COP21, which was held in Paris. I was deeply concerned that after we had held 20 COPs with the specific aim of controlling the level of CO2 in the atmosphere, those levels had continued to rise and had actually reached 400 parts per million by the time of the Paris Agreement. Now, that was a massive rise from the 354 parts per million when James Hansen, a man I greatly admire, briefed the US Congress in 1988. He said then anything above 350 ppm was a dangerous level for humanity if it was maintained for any period of time. And here we were in 2015, all those years later, not only had it been maintained, it had been greatly increased. So, as we entered into COP21 in Paris, I felt very, very nervous, and I felt the need that I had to write a book about it. And this was because my own experience, having been involved in defence strategic management during my working career, I knew that the only thing that mattered was the primary mission statement. There were always a myriad of supplementary mission statements that grew from vested interests, like lack of money, political positioning, and so on. But these all had to be fended off if a clear focus on the primary goal was to be retained. Well, it was clear to me in 2015 that while the primary mission statement for the IPCC should have always been the reduction of atmospheric CO2 and other greenhouse gas emissions, such a goal had not been met because it had become progressively obscured by a myriad of secondary mission statements. Carbon trading, loss and damage fund for the poorer nations, national economic growth, food security, I could go on. Now, while all these things are very, very important, they are subsidiary, and the COP should have focused entirely on the primary objective of reducing greenhouse gases, particularly as the whole process of that primary goal was set up to rely on consensus and not majority vote. And I'm sure most listeners who followed the COPs will know that they grow and grow in number of people attending. Indeed, they've even got to the point now where they don't talk about greenhouse gas emissions on every occasion. They dedicate a particular session to loss and damage, important though that is, when in fact, every time we go to a COP, there should only be one goal. And even this COP coming up in Brazil, you can look at it and think, well, the political consensus is not as good as when we went to COP21. Now, one could ask why I didn't carry on and pursue my need to write a book back then. Well, in the event, Paris to me and to many others exceeded our expectations because they produced the Paris Agreement. And the Paris Agreement, for the first time, contained a firm commitment to reach net zero at between 1.5 and 2 degrees above pre-industrial by 2050. Now, this was the first time that a clearly defined target to reduce emissions had been agreed. And for my part, I thought at last we are getting some focus. As a consequence, my urge to write a book at that time receded. But sadly, by the time of COP26, 6 years later, my concerns over the IPCC effectiveness returned. The carbon levels had continued to rise to an alarming 415 parts per million. And it was clear that the Paris Agreement had not made any difference to this one key indicator. To make matters worse, there was an even fiercer fossil fuel lobby in Glasgow from both the industry and the state actors. And this was best illustrated to me when COP26 chairman, after many, many hours of haggling, actually shed a tear as he announced that they had managed to get the phrase "to phase out coal" retained in the final plenary statement. This was the moment I again resolved to write my book.
Oh, Martin, thank you for sharing your journey with us. You make a great point about a clear focus being needed that should have focused on the greenhouse gas parts per million and not various other metrics and initiatives. Our recent podcast guest, Kyle Kimball, discussed much of what you note too. He did a deep dive into why the IPCC isn't more effective as well. And we thank you that your following of this process did encourage you to write a book and work toward changing what's going on and raising awareness. And in that vein, how did writing the book lead you to your current focus on Rotary and net zero?
Well, Kathy, my engagement with Rotary involved a little bit of serendipity. 2018 was the centenary of the formation of the Royal Air Force. And one of my neighbours was a Rotarian and knew of my RAF background. So he approached me and asked if I could arrange a talk on 100 years of the RAF to their local Rotary Club. Well, I enjoyed the evening so much that I decided to become a member myself. I found that Rotary International was already making big commitments to both the climate environment and mitigation issues. I also became aware that Rotary had created two dedicated club formats for younger members to keep pace in the societal change which we are now experiencing. And as I started to think about my book, I also knew that it needed to inspire the young if it was to be a success. So the thought came to me to add a net zero suffix to the junior club formats, thereby creating a special subset focused entirely on climate change.
Thank you. That's a great idea to make the club's focus immediately clear to young people considering joining.
Rotary has an extraordinary legacy of mobilizing for health and education. Why do you believe it's so well placed to tackle climate issues now?
Well, thanks for this question. It is an important one. When I first joined Rotary in 2018, I was asked to chair the International Committee. And while fulfilling this role, the wider Rotary organisation and its power became increasingly evident to me. This is because Rotary has been cleverly set up from its outset as an interconnecting network. Individual clubs are grouped into districts, and districts are grouped into nations, and the nations are in turn linked to Rotary International headquarters, which is based in Chicago. Now, this movement was started in 1905 by a visionary called Paul Harris, who actually lived in Chicago. So it has survived the test of time and become extremely well established around the world. This makes Rotary an ideal vehicle for young people to link up with each other because the organisation is already in place. And I find when talking to young people in my family, they always say there's no way of getting involved easily other than protest. And I believe we must empower them to be able to make much greater impact. They can share ideas and coordinate their contributions to climate change through a unique and readily made global structure of clubs. And a good example of just how effective this structure can be is Rotary's role in the elimination of polio. This has been a recent flagship project where Rotary International has worked with the World Health Organization and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to eradicate the disease completely. There are only now a few tiny outbreaks of the strain in the wild. The Gates Foundation was attracted to the project because all Rotarian work is carried out on a fully voluntary basis, with just tiny management overheads in the Chicago headquarters. Well, having pointed the bigger Rotary picture with that example of polio, let me now describe just one initiative that my local Rotary Club has pioneered to show just how powerful Rotary down at the working level can be. Following the terrible tsunami in Southeast Asia in 2004, my club reacted. We looked at what we could do and we identified clean drinking water as a priority to avoid the threat of waterborne diseases. We found a solution in a provider called Aquabox, and in the first 6 months following the tsunami, members of my club had packed and dispatched some 3,200 Aquaboxes that included other useful items donated by citizens in our area. And the funding for that whole process was created by my club with charity events and having various raffles and so on to get the money to do that work. We recognised disaster relief, including access to clean water, would be an ongoing need, and we continued to develop our operation. By 2006, members of the club had registered at Chelwood Bridge Rotary Club charity called Water Survival Box Limited. This purpose was to provide safe and clean water for people who survived natural or man-made disasters. Since the initial setup, the project has continued to grow, and our water survival boxes now contain other essential utensils and materials that we have identified over the years from the feedback that we have received from the areas that we have helped. Our first consignment following the 2004 disaster was 60 boxes to the Philippines following a typhoon that devastated that country. We have since sent 25,000 boxes to over 60 disasters in 14 countries in Southeast Asia, Africa, South America, and the Caribbean. More recently, we have provided 14 separate consignments of filter pumps, solar lamps, and full water survival boxes to the Ukraine. Our work has been supported by other Rotary clubs and districts, as well as agencies such as the Red Cross, the Red Crescent, Oxfam, Merlin Humanity First, UK World Vision, and Taiwan School. We have also established partnerships with charities in Switzerland and Denmark, who provide generous financial support to all our distributions, together with Rotary clubs in Sweden and France, who also help us. Now, this is just one example of how Rotary can scale at speed from a club of just 30 people and then continue to deliver the benefits for decade after decade. There are thousands and thousands of other examples across the Rotary family. I am firmly convinced we can leverage the power of Rotary through our partnership with MIR.
Thank you, Martin. That's incredible. And it really shows how powerful Rotary's network is when it comes to getting things done fast and sustaining impact over time. I think that's what makes it such a great fit for tackling climate issues too. MIR brings the technical side, like reflective cooling and other passive solutions, while Rotary brings the people's power and community trust to make those ideas real on the ground. Thank you.
Martin, please tell us about Rotaract Net Zero. What is it and how did it begin?
Well, I have to be really honest, Kathy. The concept just appeared in my head one night. Since 2021, I have spent hundreds of hours trying to write and shape my book. I want it to be an enabling tool for every person who is concerned about the climate crisis, but who has insufficient knowledge or is unsure how to engage. In mulling over the challenge of achieving engagement using the media of a written book, I concluded that there were two priority audiences: people who are not necessarily fully aware of the threat that climate change poses, and most importantly, the young, who have to have sufficient knowledge and the means to do something about it, because this threat poses the greatest threat to them of any other cohort living. They are the ones in the firing line. So I can say that while the Rotaract Net Zero started in my head, the ability to make it a reality requires the club format that Rotary has designated for the young. And I actually started with the club format called Interact. And this is a Rotary Club format designed and designated for 12 to 18 year olds. I chose the Interact format because the target audience can easily be identified and reached in the school environment that they attend. And my first Interact club was the Chew Valley School Interact Net Zero Club. This was very successful, and I believe their teacher, Rose, who supported the initiative, is now one of your team, because I proposed MIR as their international project. Like all good new ideas, however, they also highlight problems. And in this case, the child protection measures that now sadly are so necessary became quite a large constraint. Things like going online for Zoom meetings. Then add the pressures from exam preparation and an unsustainable turnover rate with the arrival of the next school year every 12 months made this format extremely difficult to scale. This is why we are now engaging in the Rotaract adult age group. I say again, if anyone listening to this blog would like to form a group of, say, 5 to 10 people or more and become one of the trailblazers, buy the book, available on Amazon worldwide, and is now available as an ebook on Kindle. Go to chapter 12 and scan the QR code. That is in there, and your journey will begin. As James Hansen has said on many occasions, we must keep talking to as many of our friends and neighbours as possible about climate change so that they can vote for leaders who will help us draw back from the brink of cascading tipping points. My book was conceived as a written conversation to do just that.
Thank you. That's such a great story. And yes, Rose has been such a wonderful addition to our team. I love that the collaboration started so organically through shared goals and education and climate action. And it really shows how ideas can evolve and starting with students and then expanding to Rotaract members who can carry that momentum forward. So thank you very much.
Martin, so following on that, what kinds of projects do you imagine Rotaract, Net Zero, and MIR working on together?
Well, that's a great question, Kathy. And it's where it could become very exciting with Rotaract, Net Zero, and MIR working together. The Rotary model is for clubs to run one domestic project and one international project each year. I have defined the initial domestic project for the Interact Net Zero clubs as getting their voice heard on the climate crisis. I perceive that this can be achieved by using my book to ensure that they have the knowledge to undertake informed scrutiny of the progress being made by national and international leadership. I offer ideas in my book for them to hold them to account over their failure to control rising greenhouse gas emissions and to advocate ways that a more focused approach by our leaders will achieve greater and more meaningful success. So that is the domestic project. We are declaring MIR as our partner for the Rotaract Net Zero International project because I greatly admire what you are doing. You have the ability to change the Earth's albedo, but you're not using geoengineering with all the challenges that presents. Having said that, you need to scale as quickly as you can. In this respect, my intention is to go beyond just fundraising with MIR as the Rotaract International project, although funding will play a part initially. But I remember Dr. Tao being interviewed by Dan Miller, where they concluded that what really makes a difference to energy balance using the MIR concept. To do that, they would have to cover an area almost as big as the United States. I saw that as a slightly tongue-in-cheek way of saying scalability is a problem for you, and this is where Rotary could really make a difference. Not to cover an area the size of the USA, I hasten to add, but to scale up significantly. As I see it, MIR has two contributions to make. To assist poor communities to reduce the heat signature of their living accommodation, given they have no access to air conditioning, and second, to potentially buy time for all of us to draw back from the tipping point risks with a much wider deployment of reflective panels around the globe. I understand how vital both these goals are, because just taking the rising threat that I cover in my chapter 11 of my book, we face a really scary picture. We need to help to scale your operations as effectively as we can. I have not gone into the Rotary funding structure, which could also be brought to bear in support of a well-argued case. Rotary International and their foundation fund provide Rotarians worldwide with support to deliver projects that really make a difference, and we must hold our leaders to account. The climate threat has now reached a point where we either decide to leave our descendants to perish because we failed to act, or we decide to fight tooth and nail and pull back from the climate brink. And I would hope that all future Rotaract clubs would opt for the fight and tooth and nail option to preserve their future. To pursue this option effectively, it is essential for all future Rotaractors to have a sound working knowledge of the issues. That is why one reason for writing my book as a point of reference. As far as I am aware, The Nemesis of Planet A is unlike any other book written on climate change. It is a handbook on all climate issues and also challenges the COP process, proposing a full-time international greenhouse gas emissions management agency. And there are a lot of details on that in part three of the book. But it does make some quite drastic proposals of taking a completely new approach to the problem at a global level. This is the key proposal that I would like all Rotaract Net Zero clubs to lobby for or to challenge under their domestic projects, because it is clear to me, for the reasons I have already stated, the COP process will not save us from catastrophe. We also need to think about how we can help maintain the Earth albino effect, as I have said. I have already shared some embryonic thoughts with you, Kathy, but for the benefit of our listeners, let's fly a kite a bit more publicly. I have a dream that hundreds of Rotaract Net Zero clubs are working with their local authority recycling plants, where they exist, and are negotiating a process where they use some of the recycled and process output to produce MIR panels that meet the material and construction spec produced by MIR.
Thank you, Martin. Absolutely. Our partnership, I believe, turns big science into visible service and advocacy, and something young people and all people can feel and measure. And at MIR, we're very eager to begin this journey with you and the Rotarians worldwide.
Martin, you've spoken often about the power of young people in Rotary. How does this Rotaract Net Zero tap into that energy and sense of agency?
Right. Well, the first step is to get the offer out there and hope that it gets taken up by lots and lots of young people. This podcast is part of that process. If we cannot attract young people, the initiative will fail. If I was young, I would never let that happen, because I would see clearly that for my future, it depended upon much more being done to reduce man-made greenhouse gas emissions. Just imagine, to take just one climate tipping point, and there's a lot about it in my book. If the permafrost thaw became self-sustaining, as it could well do, what a calamity that would be. Chapter 9 in my book covers this in the most terrifying piece of writing I have ever created. To provide some perspective, the COVID pandemic caused widespread psychological anxiety. It was brought under control within months. A self-sustaining permafrost thaw would be a death sentence, because no amount of human ingenuity could reverse it. The dystopian nature of such a situation unfolding over a few hundred years is beyond imagination. And the psychological disarray of such a situation would release on our young and the future generations a quite frankly terrifying outlook, and we need to do something about it. I noticed that Johan Rockström, on his way to COP30, is really calling this out and saying we now have the moment of truth. We must do something about it. My Rotaract Net Zero offering provides the 2 billion young people living on Earth today who are in that age group with a roadmap for them to really make a difference.
Thank you. That's such a powerful way to put it. I think young people really do understand that sense of urgency. And you see in how many are already organizing, innovating, and refusing to accept inaction as a norm. And what's inspiring about the Rotaract Net Zero is that it gives that energy a real structure and a way to turn fear or frustration into purpose and collective action.
Thank you both. That is very well said. Martin, what have you learned from Rotary's past successes, like eradicating polio, that can inform this new climate mission?
Well, Kathy, without doubt, the first thing to do with any Rotary project is to create a credible vision and a delivery plan for the objectives that you want to achieve. Rotary International is big business. There are 1.2 million Rotarians around the world. And in the latest year that there are figures for, that's 23 to 24, they dispensed 1,287 global grants to tackle the big issues, such as polio, totaling $72 million in that year alone. 485 district grants were dispensed to meet successful applications that were submitted by district governors. 106 regional disaster grants, and those were reactive in response to appeals from affected regions, and these totaled $4 million. And then, of course, all the districts and the clubs themselves are actively engaged in raising money and putting it to good use in their local areas, as I have already described in the case of my club with the water survival boxes. I can describe the Rotaract Net Zero clubs as a bottom-up project because the initiative is coming from my club. It is not coming from Rotary International down, and Rotary's leverage can work both ways, and that's important to realise. With the Rotaract Net Zero initiative, it can spawn in a myriad of different ways because we cannot predict which group of people will take up the challenge to form a club, or where in the world and how many and what rate clubs will form. That is why we have developed the Chelwood Bridge Rotaract Net Zero website to act as a coordinating centre capable of coordinating any pattern of new Rotaract Net Zero clubs that may emerge. We just need to make sure we can communicate and agree an overall plan as we go forward that will hopefully spread through the whole Rotary global network. The second thing we have to do, because it can't work without people, is to attract as many as we can of the 2 billion young adults between the age of 18 and 30 alive on the earth today, and encourage them to form and join Rotaract Net Zero clubs. I say again, if anyone out there is listening to this or would like to pass the message on to someone they think would be interested, please do so. If we can achieve the ambition of a network of Rotary Net Zero clubs, it is important that all of them reach a common level of climate knowledge. The Nemesis of Planet A was written by me to provide them with that knowledge so that they can constructively hold their elected leaders to account, then explain to them how they want them to grip the climate crisis. There is also to be a whole new crop of ideas and initiatives that will come from the very environment of the young people working together to save our corridor of life on this planet. The urgency behind this task is simple. It is to prevent the 16 irreversible climate tipping points that are rapidly growing into an existential threat from breaching. We must pull back from the brink now. If those tipping points didn't exist, and they do, and we know exactly how threatening they are, we could muddle along, because one could look forward, say, 50 years from now, and we might find some new tech or be able to do something that isn't obvious today. We don't have that time. We just do not have that time. And that is the main message I want to get across in this podcast. In terms of political influence, I'll give you an example of what can be done to bring influence to bear. In the UK, 1,000 signatures on a parliamentary petition in our country forces Parliament to formally consider it for debate in the House of Commons. And that brings significant press interest in the process. I also happen to know that there are 9 million people in the UK between the age of 18 and 30. So a relatively small number of them could actually force a debate in Parliament. We have the answer, and I'm sure that's the same in every other country in the world. It's just a question of focusing it and making sure it gets directed constructively. I'm sure there are a number of ways to have similar effect in many other countries, and this is far more effective, I'm afraid, than individuals gluing themselves to the highways in protest. At a local level, well-crafted letters to local representatives can also be very effective. And finally, As the number of Rotaract Net Zero clubs hopefully grow, the young members can network with each other through the Chelwood Bridge Rotary Club Net Zero website, which has been set up for them to use and to evolve. We have registered and owned that website at the moment, but if Rotaract International became a big movement, that website could become their website and they could develop it in their own right.
That makes sense. Wonderful. Yes. Thank you for so clearly illustrating how this global movement could unfold and grow to become wonderfully powerful. You paint a hopeful picture of how grassroots action by caring individuals can become a worldwide force for good.
For young people listening who want to start a Rotaract Net Zero Club or a link with MIR, what first steps would you suggest?
Well, as I say, Arana, my preferred route would be for them to buy my book, either through Amazon or now on Kindle as an ebook, or any other outlet that they would prefer to use. I don't want anybody to think I'm trying to get people to buy my book for financial reasons. I spent several thousand pounds of my own money in getting it published. And should there be any money coming back, the first thing that would happen would be to get it translated into 5 or 6 other languages so that more and more people on earth can read it. And if they scan the QR code in chapter 12 to start their journey towards forming a Rotaract Net Zero Club, then they will be on their way. And again, if cost is a problem, one copy can be shared amongst a group. It just needs to be available as a reference to ensure full understanding of just how big the climate threat we all face is, and to be able to articulate that threat from a fulcrum of knowledge rather than one of emotion. While emotion is very understandable, it doesn't normally move political goalposts. All climate indicators are now flashing red, from the 18 irreversible tipping points, as we've discussed, and add that to the failing health of our biosphere to reabsorb as much carbon as it has been able to do up until this point, and we really are facing an existential crisis. Our atmosphere is also being badly damaged, and few people understand that. I'm talking about all levels, including the upper atmosphere, because CO2 emissions have reached them all. Without doubt, we now have a climate emergency on our hands. The young are the most threatened by this, and they should be given a structure within which to demand a change in the rate that humanity reacts. The older generations owe that to them. The young need to be the human force demanding a more credible structure to confront a growing climate crisis. But they need to be provided with some form of global structure that can empower them to do this. Part 3 of my book offers proposals to replace the ineffective COP structure, take away the money constraint by proposing multi-centennial climate bonds, offer a global youth network through the Rotary for them to connect and to make a difference. And finally, give them the opportunity to work with MIR to retain or improve the Earth's albedo effect, to buy more time for us to draw back from the brink of our own destruction. Clearly, the link in my book should not be the only route to recruit Rotaract Net Zero clubs, because there are tremendous benefits to be gained by supporting the work that MIR is doing, regardless of the whole battle on the climate change front. While I would prefer all these components of a new way forward to be embraced, the Rotary journey can begin by accessing the link shown on the screen now to register on the website.
Thank you. That's a very great roadmap too. It starts with a conversation and builds into a very, very important collaboration.
Thank you, Martin. You've described Rotary as a moral engine. What does that mean in the context of climate action?
Well, the general vision of Rotary from the outset was to support neighbours, friends, leaders and problem solvers who see a world where people unite and can take action to create lasting change for the better. This should happen across the globe, in our communities and in ourselves. And that's really what Rotary International stands for. In terms of climate change, Rotary International currently addresses climate change with its environmental focus, which includes projects like planting mangroves and trees, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and supporting sustainable agriculture. The organisation also advocates for environmental stewardship by promoting sustainable consumption, education communities, and participating in international climate conferences. The net zero concept that my club has created is new and is focused on the climate threat as distinct from the stewardship aspects. And I hope from our discussion so far that listeners can draw that distinction.
Thank you. I like the way you highlight community. It's so important in mobilizing and encouraging each other, and it hits the psychological component that you mentioned as we fully face the climate crisis. And it's what we focus on at MIR all the time, is empowering the local communities to address and adapt and work together to face the growing heat that they're dealing with, and find ways to combat that. And so I think that's just very important. And I like that dual focus on a global movement and the value and power in local communities.
Well, your idea there, Kathy, resonates completely with the whole Rotary ethos and with the net zero concept of reducing the climate risk to a level where hope, not despair, predominates. It's so important to retain hope. The initial goal for Rotaract Net Zero Clubs is to treat the period between now and 2030 as a battle to secure our survival. This is because the collective climate science view is that we need to reduce annual CO2 emissions to 43% of the emission levels that occurred in the year 2019. That sounds a little bit complicated, but that number in 2019 was 36.8 gigatons. Reducing that by 43% would mean reducing emissions by 2030 to 16.73 gigatons to meet the target. The reason that for that short-term target was introduced was that climate scientists recognised Paris had not delivered sufficiently to get us to net zero by 2050 at 1.5 to 2 degrees without an accelerated effort to pull us back on track. Now, some people say we can't have the perpetual pain of restricting ourselves to solve the climate problem. Well, my view is this isn't going to go on forever. We are on the brink of moving away from fossil fuels completely, if you take a 50 to 100 year view. It's a fraction of time in the life of this planet. And if we can just make that happen by all pulling together now, then all those generations in the future who will be able to live completely off the sun's energy, the winds and the hydropower, and we can go on and on without constraining their activities well into the future. Future generations won't have to wear hair shirts and try to make things better because we will have done it for them. There's a phrase, remember, on Remembrance Sunday. It goes, they gave their today so that we could have enjoy our tomorrow. And that's what we've got to do. We must moderate our today so that future generations can see this planet going forward in a healthy way tomorrow. And it's the next 5-year burst that we need to put a lot of effort into as a first step in lowering climate threat levels. Now, already around COP30, I suddenly hear the word 2035 as the new emergency target. So we've suddenly moved out. And I have to say That is unacceptable in terms of securing our survival. Moreover, COP30 statements released so far have said they have only received around 30% of the nationally determined contributions that the nations should all have submitted. And no reference at all was made to the US withdrawal from the Paris Agreement. The information that they have released is to forecast a 10% reduction of existing atmospheric CO2 levels by 2035. The latest published number that I can access is the incredible 37.42 gigatons that were emitted during 2024. Now, a 10% reduction from this number equals 33.66 gigatons per annum by 2035. Well, just let's think about that. How does this square with the declared requirement at COP26 to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to a level equal to 43% of the 219 annual emissions that I mentioned earlier on? You will recall that I produced an annual target in 2030 of 16.73 gigatons per annum. And this position was driven by the threat of the 16 irreversible tipping points and recognised at COP26. And yet in the COP30 announcement, it doesn't even get a mention. Instead, a new forecast appears predicting double the 16.73 gigatons 2030 target to one of 33.6 gigatons 5 years later in 2035. That just is not tenable. If we are to bring the climate back under some sort of control, we are deluding ourselves otherwise. We have got to start to face up to this shocking state of affairs. I repeat, a full-time IGMA, as I call it, International Emissions Management Agency, is essential if we are to avoid unimaginable catastrophe. Against this backdrop, scaling the MEERS solutions at speed is also an essential component of a partnership between Rotary and yourselves.
Yeah, those numbers really put things into perspective, and that's where our missions really connect. Both MEER and Rotaract Net Zero are about empowering people at the local level to act now instead of waiting for top-down solutions. And when communities understand the science and have a lot of tools to respond, they can build resilience from the ground up.
Martin, looking ahead, how do you see this Rotaract MEER partnership evolving over the next few years?
Well, the first thing is to recruit Rotaractors, because they are the key resource to make all this work possible. So I say again, if there's anyone out there listening to this podcast who fits that role, then please get engaged now. Equally, if there are any Rotarians listening to this, please contact Chelwood Bridge Rotary Club to help us move this initiative forward. I would also like to say, when looking at how Rotary could help scale MEER, that could be done by any age group, not just Rotaractors. And I propose we keep working together to see how that could best be achieved through the wider Rotary organization.
Great. Thank you, Martin. So this could grow into a living laboratory for climate science, one that links all of these young and older, all age leaders across continents. Mm-hmm. In our podcast, we like to include our Try This segment, where we leave listeners with something practical. Martin, what's one small thing anyone can do this week to support Rotaract Net Zero or MEER's mission?
Well, Kathy, I know I'm going to sound a little bit like a broken record here, but if you're between the age of 18 and 30 plus, buy the book and use the link in Chapter 12. And if you are on your financial uppers, that was termed as skint in my younger years, visit Chelwood Bridge Rotary Club's Net Zero website. And the link is on the screen as we talk today, and you could begin your journey towards becoming a Rotaractor. And if you are a Rotarian, take this recording of this MEER podcast and show it to your club. then contact Chelwood Bridge Rotary Club through the Rotary Register if you think you can help take this Rotaract Net Zero concept forward. Alternatively, contact MIR if you have any ideas on how to help them scale.
Thank you. So action starts with connections. Find your local circle and begin that conversation.
We have another quick segment called Myth versus Measurement. Martin, what's one myth about Rotary you'd like to retire and what's the reality?
Right. Well, the first thing I'd like to say is we're not a bunch of middle-aged men who meet once a fortnight to have a meal together. And while we do a little bit of that as well, we are a dynamic organisation with laser focus on improving the world, and we are having a growing number of women who are also active Rotarians.
That's so true. Rotary today looks completely different than what my people imagine. There's so much innovation, diversity, and youth leadership shaping what comes next. Thank you. We have another quick question. What gives you the most hope right now when you look at young people and climate leadership?
Well, first of all, I have tremendous respect for young people who face greater challenges than perhaps any generation that has gone before them. And that's a really awesome thought when you think we've been around for about 300,000 years. I wrote my book to make sure as many young people as possible have a firm grasp of what these challenges are. Not to depress them, but to empower them by offering them tangible hooks to become engaged from a position of knowledge and to act through a structure like Rotary International. There is still some agency to turn this climate crisis around, but there is absolutely no do-nothing or business as usual option. So more and more of the young and not so young people who respond to this mere podcast, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Hope isn't abstract. It's a generational momentum. There is a lot of fearless and creative young people, and they don't wait for permission to act. They're finding new ways to organize, to lead, and to make this crisis personal and solvable. And that energy is what keeps the movement alive.
Thank you so much for joining us today and for showing how service and science can come together through Rotaract, Net Zero, and MIR.
Well, thank you both so much. I've enjoyed the chat, and let's hope something good comes out of it and we can start to move this initiative forward. We have so much to do in so little time, and we have got to turn the leadership of the world into a different direction. All of those are big challenges, and the people that should face them and deliver them are the young.
Yes, thank you. Listeners, you'll find links to Rotaract Net Zero, Martin's book, The Nemesis of Planet A, and details about the Rotary MIR partnership in the show notes. Please read, share, and get involved.
If this episode inspired you to see service as a form of climate action, please follow the MIR podcast, leave a review, and share it with someone in your network. Find resources and updates at MIR.org and on our social media.
MIR is listener-supported. Your donations power public education and our ground-based cooling projects worldwide. Contribute at MIR.org/donate.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back soon with more voices from the global climate and service community.
See you next time.